I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey Queen fans, producer Sam here. Just jumping on ahead of all the jazz goodness to let you know there was a small technical difficulty in the recording of this episode. All that means is we've had to use a backup recording for Rose Audio, so we may sound a bit more muffled than usual, but don't worry, we've still got awesome chat and plenty of Queen. Played loud, of course. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Queen Pod, the only podcast in the world with Queen playing all the way through it. It's amazing. I'm your host, Ro, and only our team is the real team. So, last Tuesday, I saw her down on the beach. I stood and watched a while, and she looked at me and she said, "What the f*** are you looking at?" It's comedian Suze Kantner.
Hello. I apologise for being so hostile.
I gave you an extravagant one today, I thought, Suze.
Thank you.
It's just... Actually, it's quite difficult to find a lyric that doesn't kind of seem like it'll end up being creepy. So if it has
okay,
to, I apologise.
Well, what a winning endorsement for this side of the album.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. He's a sex machine ready to reload. It's Queen documentarian Simon Lupton.
Thank you very much.
Batteries charged.
Batteries charged, ready to reload.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. And fool got no business, so he takes his living where he can. We have the mighty comedian John Robbins with us today. Hooray!
Hey, everyone.
Hey, John, how are you? It's lovely to have you with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
We are looking at side B of jazz. So if you haven't heard us talk about side A of jazz, literally go back to the previous episode, have a listen to that as we talk about this wonderful album. And we're getting into the second half of it today, which is some exciting, exciting stuff. You might find that my cold is really going to mess with the sound levels. Let's blame the cold this week. Let's blame that. All right, should we kick off with Queen of the Champions?
We are the champions. We are the champions.
Do we have a Queen moment we want to share? John, didn't you do a marvellous... interview with someone recently?
Yes, a big Queen moment for me. We interviewed Brian for the podcast I do with Ellis on Five Live called How Do You Cope? And we talked to Brian at great depth, actually. I was really amazed by how candid he was. Spoke to him about his various emotional struggles throughout the years, how he's dealt with those, and how some of them are reflected in Back to the Light and Another World. Spoke to him about time he took away to sort of focus on himself. We talked about John Deacon.
Really?
Yeah, which was very, very interesting. You know, he didn't sort of... He's always very good at not speaking to John's experience, but certainly spoke a lot about how difficult it was losing John from the band so soon after Freddie. Yeah, it was a remarkable conversation. I'm really excited for everyone to hear it as well. About an hour and a half, maybe
wow.
20 minutes.
Amazing. Yeah, is it coming out in April?
That will probably come out... it'll definitely be out in April, I think, at some point. because we've released two episodes so far, and I think Brian's will be the sort of fourth or fifth episode.
Okay, so we've got like 3 weeks top, Simon, to get Brian on this pod so we can gazump. John, right?
And we just talk to him about all the same things.
Okay, so that's an affirmation. I'm taking that as a clear affirmation in writing. That's awesome, John. That seems really, really cool. It sounds also like you were asking him a lot of questions that I think maybe he doesn't normally get asked as well. It sounds like you've kind of managed to get into it properly.
Yeah, and we were able to talk about the impact of Freddie's illness and Freddie's death without it feeling like it was sort of just another interviewer out for some kind of, morbid scoop on Freddie, which I think has happened to him in the past. So I was quite conscious of not pushing for any sort of tabloid angle, really. Yeah. But it was about Brian's experience and how he coped and what he's found helpful and what he's found unhelpful.
Yeah, something I noticed about him last year is that he doesn't want to see questions in advance. I think he likes to respond to them in the moment and organically. And so I think if you have a less cliche set of questions, then you will get a richer result with him because he's just an engaged and interested human being. Isn't
he? Yeah, I mean, I think that's true with any sort of person who does a lot of interviews, is you definitely get their attention and perhaps the best answers if you don't ask them the obvious stuff or certainly don't lead with the obvious stuff. Yeah. I think it's always good if your first question to someone is like the first time they've been asked that. Because then they suddenly go, oh, hello, these people are interested and they've paid attention to my work or whatever.
Just phoning it in. Really cool. Well, congratulations, man.
Can't wait to hear it.
That happened for a long time, so well done.
Thank you.
Very, very cool. I have mostly been watching Lego Masters Australia, which means, and if you haven't seen Lego Masters Australia, it is a great tonic for the absolute appalling state of the world. I highly recommend it. It means that I haven't encountered that much Queen over the last couple of weeks since we last recorded. However, I know I mentioned this on the last pod, but I did go to a funeral last week for our dear friend Paul Byrne, and it opened, the whole thing opened with this beautiful version of Under Pressure by Karen O from the AAS and Willie Nelson. I don't know if you guys have heard that version. It's sort of like, you know, these songs that get birdified. It's one of those, but it is actually incredibly moving and sweet. Mm. That was probably my Queen moment, actually. It was just that reminder of, this is first and foremost a Queen fan here, you know what I mean? It was a very special moment.
Pressure pushing down on me, pressing down on you, no man asked for. Under pressure that burns a building down, splits a family in two, puts people on streets. That's okay.
It's a terror of knowing.
I don't think there's a huge amount of news to go over. We talked about Another World coming. It's coming out on the 22nd of April, so by the time you listen to this, probably already got it on your Spotify or iTunes, whatever you have it on. But what we would like to do is thank our wonderful patrons. If you go along to www.patreon.com/queenpod, you will be able to see how to get involved, how to support us. It's not very expensive, and we do try and generate as many treats for you as possible. Some of those treats include getting a badge and a postcard from us. But it also means that you will get your name shouted out on this very pod. So let us kick that off. I am going to thank the wonderful Michelle Viglianti. Is it Viglianti or Viglianti? I'm going to go with Viglianti. I hope I've got that right, Michelle. Thank you for your support.
I want to say a big thank you to Paul Bradbury. Cheers, Paul.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, good one, Paul. Paul is very active on our Facebook Queen Pod fan page thing and does loads of fun stuff. He's a good man. And who are you thanking, Simon?
Well, for me, this week's Mr. Fahrenheit is Nigel Lewis. So thank you, Nigel.
Wonderful stuff. Nice one, Nigel Lewis. And John.
Today, I'd like to thank Lisa Malloy. Thank you, Lisa.
Wonderful Lisa Malloy. I hope I've got this right. I think she might be all the way out in New Zealand. It might be Australia. If it is Australia, then forgive me. or I've got it completely wrong. But I have seen lots and lots of Lisa getting involved with stuff on Patreon and on Facebook. It's wonderful stuff. So yeah, jump in. Get involved. Look, let's just talk about some Queen songs.
Yes.
I think that's what we should do. Let's talk about Queen songs. So we're on the side B of Jazz, which was released on the 10th of November, 1978, which was a good time. And Mr. Simon Lupton gave us a wonderful little historical context for the album on the last episode. But I think you have some colour to fill in for us here.
I have, absolutely. Yes, so as our dear listeners know, that it's normally this is the bit where I sit here and waffle on about what Queen were up to from a live perspective. And so in that respect, when Jazz is released in November 1978, the band are on a 7-week, 35-show North American tour. And some of the songs from the new album have been worked into the set list. One change worthy of note, which I found quite interesting, but that could just be me, is this is the first tour where the band's final encore is now one of their own compositions rather than a cover. Because previously the likes of Jailhouse Rock had always closed the show, but now it's their own stuff.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
Okay.
But I'm going to actually stop there because the set list for this tour is rapidly becoming the one that makes up the Live Killers album. And in January 1979, Queen embark on their biggest European tour to date, 28 shows in 7 countries over 6 weeks, with 19 of those shows being properly recorded by engineer John Etchells for Live Killers. Now, we are planning an extra special pod on Live Killers, so I'll save the tales from that tour until then. But there is still plenty going on in the world of Queen for us to chat about. One particularly significant event is the launch of the Jazz album in New Orleans on October the 31st, 1978. This party is a legendary occurrence in Queen folklore, and those present recount stories of things like crates of champagne waiting in their hotel rooms on arrival, and it pretty much goes downhill from there. The bill for the event was about £200,000 and had 400 guests. I've seen photos.
78.
Yeah,
grand,
that's a lot
of money.
That's a lot of money. I've seen photos of the party, and there's a fantastic rock and roll mix of exotic dancers with snakes, strippers, unicyclists, naked mud wrestlers, drag artists, fire eaters, and New Orleans jazz bands. Roger tells a great story of one act being a man who lay on one of the buffet tables and covered himself entirely in meat. So as the guests approached with their plate and reached out to take some of the meat, he'd wriggle so the whole meat display would just wobble. Roger said he got introduced to the man before the event and asked him what his act was and got the reply, "I lie under meat." that's his act. I've also read tales of a room at the back into which guests were admitted one at a time for extra special treatment. But as this is a family podcast, I think we'll leave that one there for now.
Wow.
As many of you know, there's an infamous story of Queen parties, including people of restricted growth, walking around with trays of cocaine balanced on their heads. And that seems to stem from this particular event. But as yet, no evidence has been forthcoming to confirm this, and it's something that has always been strenuously denied. Although, right, in my experience, quite often with a slight twinkle in the eye of the person doing the denying. So I guess we'll never know. So clearly what happens at a Queen party stays at a Queen party.
I think it's true, because the guy under meat is weirder, and that's real.
Exactly.
I like the sound of the ham man.
I love the fact that the ham man is not strenuously denied. It's just like, yeah, there was a man under ham.
How did you get into that, mate? Did he get hired to do it? Or...
Well, there you go, kids. Yeah. There's a job for everyone out there. You just got to find it. Got to find your
Wonderful.
Thing. The band had wisely scheduled 2 days off in the touring schedule after this, and the people there were having such a great time, they never actually got round to playing the guests the album, which was supposed to be the whole point. No one actually heard it. And finally, I'd just like to give a mention to our friends at the Queen Fan Club, because on November the 11th, they held their first convention back in 1978, which took place at the Empire Ballroom in London's Leicester Square. It was hosted by Radio 1 DJ Alan Fluff Freeman, and those attending were treated to a full playback of the new album. The band also sent a telegram from the US, which was read out to everyone. It was only a half-day event, but started the trend of the annual convention that quickly grew to a 3-day affair and continues to this very day. So
it does.
Big
it
shout
does.
Out to all the convention goers.
Amazing. Well, so we've had a little hiatus for the last 2 years, but fingers crossed it'll happen this year. It would be really nice.
That would be nice.
78 goes all the way back to that.
Yeah.
With Alan Freeman. I love that.
There you go. That's all from me.
Bop-a-goos. All right. Fantastic stuff. All right. Well, thought we should just have a little chat about the thing that we touched on this a little bit on the last episode, but I think it's worth having a chat because we've got John with us now. John, this is the last album of the No Synth era.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think is quite interesting about the album is how it's a bridging album from that sort of 70s era sound into the 80s era sound. And I actually think this side of the album is a really good example of how bridgy it is. Like, it's still very much 70s Queen, but we're starting to hear sounds that we're going to hear more of on The Game and further in. Do you have anything to say on that?
I think it's sort of styles as well as sounds. I think perhaps that bridging element of it does make it feel a bit uneven at places. Mm. Like, I think it's probably the first album where you don't get a sense that the band all share the same vision for what the album's going to be.
Right.
And, you know, there's contrast across the songs in a way that perhaps there really hasn't been before. I think one result of that is probably Dead on Time.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think only sounds like a Queen song for 1 second. And it's at 1:12. And it's the bit where they go, ooh, no manner.
And
I think that's the only bit, apart from the guitar sound, which is obviously Brian, because Brian is always Brian, and you can tell his unique tone from a great distance. I think that when you listen to Dead on Time, you could probably name like a dozen other rock bands who could have written and played it. Whereas I think the rest of the album is perhaps more distinct.
Interesting. Mm. Interesting. Well, I think it's going to be an interesting discussion this week, because I think there's going to be songs that we fully disagree on. Like, I definitely fully disagree with what you just said about Dead on Time, for example. Though I accept your point of view. Like, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you mean by that sounding a lot more like that era's kind of rock music, but I'm like, no, it's Freddie and Brian and Roger and John, definitely very, very Queen as well. Do you know what I mean? For me, and I think there are going to be a lot of those across this half of the album. What do you think? So?
Oh yeah, but, go on, John, sorry, just one thing. Like, so many of the songs end with something very odd happening in the last bar, and like a whistle or. They're just. True. I just get the feeling they're not quite sure how to end the songs, so there are quite a few little sort of jokes in the tracks. So it's very playful.
I think what you're getting at, John, where I do definitely agree with you, is Queen are always eclectic. Like, The Night at the Opera is an incredibly eclectic album. We've talked about that. Sheer Heart Attack's incredibly eclectic, but it always feels designed and coherent in a way that maybe this particular album is a little bit less so. And the band themselves have kind of said they're less enamoured maybe with this album than other albums. What do you think, Suze?
I think John's right. It doesn't hold together as a concept in the same way as A Night at the Opera and Day at the Races had.
Sure.
But I think News of the World had started going a bit that way where it was more Hero Hour, 10 plus or minus one tracks. And I think jazz and... I always think of jazz and News of the World together.
That's a bit of a pair, yeah.
Yeah, that bridge.
And yet, even when an album is maybe not up... For some people, up to the same level as some of their other albums, it's still packed with so much genius.
I don't think that detracts from those albums. It just... Because they've got a number of distinctive songs on both. They just don't... It's not like, oh, I know exactly what album that's from with a lot of the songs.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because like this album is one of their longer ones, and then the very next album they make, The Game, is their shortest album.
Oh, really?
39 minutes or something.
Jazz, so there was obviously none of the songs are almost all under 4 minutes. There's no epics on this one.
Yes, but there are a lot of tracks.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. In fact, if you're just starting your Queen collection, jazz is not a bad place to go.
Good value.
A lot of song for your dollar. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, listen, let's have a listen to a section of Dead on Time. I think it's an absolute banger. I love it. We'll go from the solo through to the end of the track, I think. And on the album liner notes, that glorious Thunderbolt is credited to God. However, it was actually recorded by Brian in a thunderstorm. It's a legit actual recording that he made himself with some recording device. Yeah. And the reason I played that solo is I found a little thing that Brian said that's quite interesting about this song, which is he said... that the speed of the solo was something that he was quite pleased with, but really nobody else was. It's something which nobody ever mentions very much. Fat Bottom Girls, I thought, was okay, but fairly banal, amazingly. I thought people would be much more interested in Dead on Time, but didn't really get that much airplay. The explosions at the end were a real thunderstorm, which occurred when we were in the south of France, and I put a tape recorder outside. Also, another little Easter egg in this song is right on that final chorus, you'll hear Freddie say the words, keep yourself alive.
Yeah.
And on the liner notes, let's see if I can actually pull it out in case we've got this little bit on YouTube, but on the liner notes, if you look very carefully, I don't know if it's sharp on the computer, but in the lyrics, if I get this, where is it? You can actually see that they have put keep yourself alive in capitals. I don't know if you can make that out. Computer. But yeah, that's a very definite sort of reference to their first album, which is a nice thing. Go on, Suze, where are you on this track, on this opening to side B?
I really loved it on this revisit of the album, having paid it very little attention over the years. I think it is an interesting song because you can hear the 5 years of maturity and confidence that they've gained since they did Keep Yourself Alive. So it's interesting that they've thrown a callback to that.
And lyrically, it's thematically in the same area, right?
Yeah. And I think Freddie's vocal is exceptional on it. From like the first second with,
you should know, we just hear that little bit that you're talking about? Is that all right? Because I just love that bit. Where you go, whoa.
But you leave on time.
Put it in your pocket, but you never can tell. So good. Is that the bit that you were talking about?
Oh, I meant all of it, but yeah. Yeah. It's Freddie loved Aretha Franklin, and that's the sort of vocal tricks she would do.
Oh, really?
And he's managed to put it into, managed to make it congruent with a hard rock song.
Really? What kind of vocal tricks are you talking about?
You hear it now in singers like Christina Aguilera, that the beginning of Ain't No Other Man, when she just goes, hey,
yeah.
And they go across the vocal break where the voice would naturally want to flip into what often mistakenly gets called the head voice, but that thinner sound.
Yeah.
They have a way of navigating the break. And it's basically just showing off, but it's really cool.
It
sounds awesome as well.
And
then you hear later, you can hear Roger Taylor's really high notes on more of that jazz. You can hear where he's flipped. So
right.
He doesn't navigate the
yes.
break.
Yes.
So he's got two different sounds in that.
Yeah,
song.
We will hear that later, actually. Yeah. Yeah, right at the end of the song. Yeah. Mm. But yeah, that's an amazing bit. I love that. I think the thing about the song for me is, I've used it in stage shows quite a bit. There was a show, a magic show that we did with Ben Hanlon, which dear producer Sam was the magician's assistant on. We've lived a life, haven't we, Sam?
Yeah.
He would stick his head strapped into a tank of water and he'd have a minute to escape. The moment the timer starts, I'd kick in with Freddie going, and play, and you would just feel the whole audience just lift, because they know it's Freddie. They know it must be Queen. They also, it's likely not a song that they know. If they do know it, they're really excited, but mostly they don't. They're like, what is this? And it just has this amazing ability to get everyone
it's
like,
very
on
hyper.
The edge of their seat, panicking. Yeah, I used it a lot in 60 Hours or 60 Minutes as well, where you want everyone to kind of come out on a buzz. And, yeah, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant track. And I think the lyrics, the older I get, become more and more relevant. You know, and it's actually quite potent lyrically. I love this track to bits. I don't know if you can tell. John Lesso.
Yeah, you're out of your mind. I don't know what you two are talking about. This song is nothing like Keep Yourself Alive. I mean, if this song is as you said, all of the band members being Queen, answer me one question, Ro.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the song about?
Oh, that's easy. That is easy. That's a very easy, easy question to answer. It is about the fact that all the way through life, you're constantly keeping yourself double busy. I've got stuff to do, and you're getting on with stuff, and you're in that rat race, and you're kind of getting through it. And then before you know what's happened, you've died. That's the end of your life. You've wasted your entire life without ever stopping to smell the bloody roses. It's really clear what the song's about.
I don't think it really is clear.
I think John's right. It does sound like they wrote the lyrics in a jam and then went, that'll do.
What?
Yes, no, that's not necessarily criticism, but it does feel like a jam song that they just sort of riffed. It's, I think you have to know who the song is about for the song to make sense.
And, oh, come on. Fool. Got my business, take your living where you can, hurry down the highway, hurry down the road, hurry past people staring, hurry, hurry, hurry. Got to get on, leave on time, leave on time. It's about those, like, it's about that rat race commuter life, isn't it? Of just constantly, like, never stopping to actually live your life. And then before you've stopped and looked around,
I think it's about someone who got a comp to their gig who is, like, either a lawyer or selling them insurance and who didn't stay around to say thank you for the show. I guarantee you that is what this song is about.
That's brilliant.
You guarantee me that the song is about a businessman running late for a Queen gig?
No, going to a Queen gig, not paying for their ticket and then leaving before the end and not saying thank you. leave on time, never got your ticket, but you leave on time. Leave on time, leave on time. Gonna get your ticket, but you leave on time.
Okay. Do you know what? The beautiful thing about Queen is that the lyrics are always open to interpretation. They can mean, they've always intended it to mean what you wanted to mean. But I feel like you've drafted a narrative on there that it's beautiful, John. And I don't want to disabuse you of that. It's a beautiful image. What a story. What a tale.
But it's not like the imagery isn't as interesting as Keep Yourself Alive. There's not really, the song doesn't really take place anywhere.
It takes place in a busy life. Like the song is super fast. It's one of their fastest, rockiest track. In fact, Suze, it's pretty close to Stone Cold Crazy in terms of its energy
and
sound.
Well, I have been running around a lot this week.
Right, so, right. And it'd be because you've got Dead on Time running around in your ears.
Yeah, really fast.
All right, brilliant. Well, I think we've covered that.
They never played it live, did they? Which is surprising because it does sound like a live track.
Yeah, bits of it would sort of appear in Brian's solos, but no, they never played that particular track live.
Yeah, it does. It feels like a concert track. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, it's an amazing track for some of us. However, we are now moving on to John Deacon's second contribution to this album. Which is In Only 7 Days. Let's listen to that. Goes on Pink Craig David by about 3 decades. Very cool stuff. It was the B-side to Don't Stop Me Now. Simon, where are you on In Only 7 Days? Did you have it in your little top 10 John Deacon songs?
I think I probably did. I can't remember my top 10 John Deacons now, but it's just so sad, isn't it? Because I think John does write from experience and what he's been through. And you know, for You're My Best Friend, for example, was written about his wife. And I can only imagine that he went on a week's holiday and this terrible sort of, you know, situation of falling in love with someone from afar, actually plucking up the courage to speak to them. And then Sunday's got to go home. It actually happened to him. And I just want to give him a hug and say it'll be all right, you know.
Feel slightly less sympathetic about You're My Best Friend if he's then gone on holiday to fall in love with someone else for a week.
Yeah. I'm assuming that he's channeling a previous encounter. Mm.
But the final lyric of the song is literally "Ooh, so sad alone."
Yeah,
I can just imagine little John on the beach with his trousers rolled up, going for a paddle with his sort of hanky tied in knots around his head, looking over to see a beautiful woman lying down and falling in love with his little fishing net.
Yeah. It's a beautiful image. Yeah.
That's stunning. That is beautiful, John. That's deeply. Suze, where are you on In Only 7 Days?
I could
do you prefer the Craig David version? Or you Queen?
I don't care for either. Sorry. I don't, yeah, this song, I don't think it needs to be on the album.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Not at all.
I feel like it feels like a song Alan Partridge would right? To me.
Suze Kempner!
I'm sorry.
My goodness.
I'm going to arrest you.
Well, do you not find it at least...
Like the my favourite bit is when he goes, Wednesday, didn't see her. I feel like this is going to get the wrath
of many
the fans,
Queen fans
who can't stand it when I get a single word today. Wrong.
Well, I think I'm sort of with you actually, Suze, but I think it works as a nice little palate cleanser between Dead on Time and Dreams Ball. But John, you're quite enamored with this.
I love this song. I love it so much.
You love it.
I listened to Jazz was one of the first Queen albums I got, and I listened to it an awful lot when I was sort of between 11 and 13. And I remember when I was 12 was the first time I really sort of fell for this girl at my school. And I think there's a real similarity between sort of childhood crushes and holiday romances, because...
Did you set that crush to this song?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, fair play, yeah.
And also, I moved out of my childhood home when I was, I think, 11. So Leaving Home Ain't Easy was another one. So those are two, like, emotional soundtracks to me. But I think, you know, if you take the summer holidays, for example, and you might see the girl you like two or three times, maybe when you're walking to the leisure centre or when you're playing football in the fields, she might just walk past with some friends. And it's that sort of, I guess the difference to me, it sounds a bit more like it was reciprocated for John in this song to an extent.
And it sounds like it really wasn't for you and you're not really over
oh,
it.
Oh, no, not at all. But I listened to it loads.
Oh, okay. So you've got a profound emotional connection. In fact, so I feel a little bit empowered to do this after you've just written off Dead on Time as not a Queen song.
It's not. There's only 1 second of it.
It's a massive Queen song. It's full of shredding guitars and it's awesome. But in Only 7 Days, I find that the melody is that sort of melody that you kind of, you could just do yourself while you're sort of painting a fence, you know, where you sort of go do, 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 do. It doesn't quite put me in, but it is short and it is beautiful in its own little way. Like, it's, I don't hate on it, but I think, like Suze, I might have been skipping this track a little bit because I was setting my... basically, I was in love with a businessman who was late for a Queen gig at that age.
He was on time for the Queen gig. He just left without saying thank you for his ticket.
He was incredibly rude and was never really particularly grateful for anything, actually. And I'm not over that. So, you know, in a way, we've mirrored each other. John Deacon, I should say, not John Robbins, played the acoustic and the electric guitars on the song as well. And you can kind of hear that a little bit, even in that little bit that we played where some of that acoustic guitar almost works like a bass line. It's lovely. It is lovely in lots of ways, but it is a slighter song for me. But that's what I mean about this album. There is a song that John absolutely adores, Simon's on board with, and Suze and I are like,
it's because we're cool.
You know what I mean? And that's great. That's why we love Queen, right? That's what it's all about. And yes, I imagine that the Queen Pod listener platforms are all going to go, what do you mean you don't like it on your Sunday?
They'll just be annoyed with me. It's all right. I'll take the hit.
No, I am 100% with you, Suze. I genuinely like...
Yeah, but they won't feel that way.
No, that's right. Do you know why that is? It's because I'm a bloke. That's why it is.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Is this the Queen album side that you get furthest into before you find a song they played live?
Oh, ooh, interesting.
Question. Well, they definitely played Dreamer's Ball live, didn't they? And that's the next track.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, Dreamer's Ball was on Live Killers, so
okay.
We're three tracks in.
But it's an interesting question. Which Queen album can you get most songs into on one side before you get to a song they played live?
Innuendo. Sorry, that was very bad taste.
Factual.
I apologise. No, it's a good question, John. That is a very, very good question.
I'm looking forward to next week's podcast, which will be hosted by John Robbins and Simon Lupton.
Look, let's move on to a track that I think we will all agree is an absolute gorgeous number, called The Dreams Ball by Brian May, which he wrote as a tribute to the great Elvis Presley, the King, who had died in 77, just the previous year. So let's have a lovely listen to this, the chorus and Brian's lovely guitar solo, I think. Be nice to listen to.
Take me to the Dreamers Bar. I'll be right on time and I'll dress so fine. You're gonna love me when you see me. I won't have to. Destroy me with a barely perceptible whisper. Gently take me. Remember, I'll be dreaming of my baby at the Dreamers Bar.
It's lovely. Suze, have you sung this song, though?
No.
You've never sung. I thought this would be a song that you would be performing every Monday night.
No, where am I on Mondays? That's when I record my podcast.
Oh, right, okay.
I think they'd find it weird if I did this every week.
Okay. Well, whichever night you've got your residency, I imagine, in a very beautiful kind of 20s-style cabaret venue.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll pitch it.
Either on the roof of something or on a bloody boat, mate.
A residency on a boat on a Monday. I'll see. Yeah. Singing Dreamers Ball. All right, I'll look into it. This song's great.
It is great, isn't it?
This song's really
we
great.
We all agree this song's great, John.
I think it's potentially the best song on the album.
Ooh.
I'm right as well. Yes. Good stuff. Right, go on, Suze. Let's get into it.
Exciting. I think Brian's having a very strong album with jazz.
He is, actually.
So you've got Fat Bottom Girls.
Yeah.
And then... that's the only one on that side, isn't it? But then he wrote Dead on Time. Yeah, he wrote Dreamers Ball, and we're going to get to Leaving Home Ain't Easy. But I think he's just having a very confident, strong album with jazz.
He is. His contributions to this album are really, really good. And even on other albums where you might feel that, like, say, an album like Hot Space, Brian's still doing his thing. Mm. You know what I mean? He always does. I love that about him. That's really true. It's a beautiful song, John. You like it that much? Is this a second crush issue or?
No, I just think it's the most coherent song on the album. I think it's like a cross between My Melancholy Blues and some of the guitar orchestrations from A Night at the Opera, so like Seaside Rendezvous or Good Company.
Yeah, it's a touch of Millionaire's Waltz in there as well, isn't it?
The sound Brian's getting on the guitar. He's never quite in this song because, like, what he was doing on A Night at the Opera was lots of layers to create the sound of an orchestra, whereas he's almost created this sound which you can interpret as lots of different instruments. But I think it's almost like one of those muted trumpets, you know, when they have... Yes. What's that thing in the end of a trumpet?
Yeah.
It's so clever. It's a really deft song, Dreamers Ball, and I could listen to it again and again and again.
Yeah. It's a song that pops into my head a lot, even when I'm not listening to jazz. You know what I mean?
They've written the perfect Elvis song. I know that's what it was inspired by, but yeah, he's literally written a perfect Elvis song.
So can you explain to me how? Because I literally only realised that now while prepping for this pod. I never knew that it was an Elvis tribute, and I wouldn't think of it as an Elvis tribute. How is it an Elvis song?
Well, to put it really simply, I could just really hear him singing this. I could imagine this landing on his desk in 1962 or whatever and going, yes. Yes,
it would
yes
be
please.
Amazing,
that's a good impression of Elvis. Yeah, he and it's thematically very Elvis, lyrically sort of deceptively simple, which Elvis songs were as well. Incredibly catchy. It's again, you can't even really call it pastiche or tribute. They've just written a early 60s Elvis song.
Yes, yeah, which is what they do.
Like, yeah.
It's that style of song and they nail it, like they did with Bites the Dust for Disco or...
And Crazy Little Thing Called Love, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, great example. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And I think what we should do is get in touch with the Recovering Queen guys, the other Queen podcast there, one of the other Queen podcasts, and they do covers, don't they?
We'll
ask them to do an Elvis version.
Oh, yeah, they should.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, that'd be so cool. I'd love to hear that. The one thing I would say about this song is the live version, and I know we're going to do Live Killers, but I think it's worth saying this. The live version of the song was quite different because Brian and Roger would do all the brass instruments with their voices.
Mm.
And I just thought it might be an idea to listen to 20 seconds or so of them doing that live. This is off Live Killers, so you can find it. Wonderful. Oh, imagine watching them do that.
You could so imagine Peter Sellers and Spike Milligan doing that, couldn't you?
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, they have that. They have that in their arsenal. They have that ability. It's amazing. Well, I think now would be a good time for a man who is guaranteed to blow our minds. It is Simon Says! Guaranteed to blow your mind. I got there.
Yeah, blow your minds rather than blow us, which
I'm not prepared to do.
yes, this is good timing because I would like to share with you something that was on the re-release back in 2011, which was an early acoustic take of Dreamer's Ball that they shared. So this is just Freddie, Brian and Roger. And so it's a slightly different version of the song, which is nice. But what I like about it is that Roger is playing drums with brushes, which is very apt for this song, which he then doesn't do on the actual recording. And I'm trying to think if there is a single Queen track where Roger plays the drums with brushes, which is a very, you know, kind of bluesy jazz thing to do. But
Charlie Watts would do that.
Yeah, but I don't think he does. And I think it's sad because he's clearly very good at it, as you're about to hear. So, yeah, here's a little bit.
What a treat. Thank you.
Of this.
I used to be your baby, used to be your pride and joy. You used to take me dancing just like any other boy. But now you found another partner. You left me like a broken toy. It's someone else you're taking, someone else you're playing to. Honey, though I'm making, just know what I have to do. If I can have you when I'm waking, go to sleep and dream I'm with you.
There you go.
Oh, lovely. That is lovely.
We talked about that song before where we're just imagining the end of a night and the band are left on stage, you know, having in a ballroom and the waiters are just clearing a few tables. There might be a couple of drunks left and the band are just playing that one for themselves.
Yeah.
Thanks for loving
me. I think we talked about that for My Melancholy Blues. Yeah. It absolutely applies here. It's very much like the ties are half open. You know what I mean? And yeah, they're all a little bit sloshed. It's such an evocative. And like Sue says, you know, Brian's just on fire on this album.
Yes.
killing it. It's a very eclectic man.
I think there he's using gypsy jazz chords. I think so it sounds like sort of Django Reinhardt, sort of really, 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 really slowed down.
What are gypsy jazz chords? Gypsy jazz chords.
If you ever watched Django Reinhardt playing,
it's
just a sort of, it's hard to explain without a guitar, but you can just sort of do it really, really fast and sort of mix it in with finger picking, but it's a really beautiful sound. That's just a demo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ideally, you'd play that on a different guitar than he's using there, I think.
Right.
You'd use a proper sort of French acoustic. They're very, very expensive.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, while you get your guitar, John, where can you find that version? Is that
That was one of the bonus tracks on the 2011 re-releases.
Great. So that's where you can find that, listeners. It's worth tracking down. I noticed something there, Suze, on that demo, where the very first line, I thought Brian had sung it, and actually then I noticed that Freddie was sort of singing in a Brian way.
Because Brian's got quite a light, airy sound.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very possible Freddie was doing that. Because in the same way as it works so much better singing All Dead, All Dead with Brian singing it.
Yes,
Freddie's voice can often be too heavy for that kind of...
A bit overwhelming.
That kind of sound. So he was probably hanging back on this track, letting a little more air through.
It was a very beautiful version of that song. I love it to pieces.
Just to clear up that fact, the guitar I'm talking about is a Selma McAferry, just a McAferry, and you get there's two main types, which is a Petit Bouche and a Grande Bouche.
Big and little mouth?
Yeah, because the
I've got a picture of one, yeah.
The hole on the Petit Bouche is a small oval one, and on the Grande Bouche is the big oval, is the big crescent one, the sort of half moon one.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only 200 of them. There's exactly 200 of them. No, there's less than 200 known surviving versions of the guitar, but my guitar teacher had one.
Wow.
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Amazing.
And they have a beautiful, beautiful sound. And I think the Grande Bouche looks gorgeous with that huge half moon hole in it.
Wow.
And Brian definitely played that, did he?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he wouldn't have been playing one of the originals, but I apologies to Brian if he is playing that sort of guitar, but on that little acoustic demo we heard, it would sound amazing on one of those.
Right. I bet Roger's got one. He's got a million guitars.
Oh, really?
Oh, he's got loads of guitars. He loves them. He collects them.
Well, it's interesting. This album, you see lots of songs where the traditional people aren't playing the traditional instruments. I don't know if that has a sort of reflection on how the album hangs together, but you've got John playing guitars on his song and Roger playing most of the instruments on a couple of his songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he certainly does on Fun It. And actually, I think Roger tends to do this a bit on his tracks. He shared the vocals with Freddie. This is the next track, so we're going back into the works. The next track on the album is Fun It by Roger Taylor. Roger shares the vocals with Freddie on this one, but he played most of the instruments, like John was saying, including the guitars and the drum pads. And the thing I love about this track is it is pure disco from a guy who said he didn't really like disco much. 2 years before they did Another One Bites the Dust, 3 years before they did Hot Space. It's like the song builds, it really builds. By the end of it, it's pretty rocky. But actually, I thought I'd play the opening because it's so very disco. Mm-hmm. Do you shun it or do you fun it?
I do a little of both, depending on my mood. No, this song's, I think it's important as like a legacy track, because so much of where Queen went after this comes from Fun It. But I think that's probably the most interesting thing about the track. It's interesting to think of it in terms of, obviously, Another One Bites the Dust, but a lot of Freddie's solo stuff. I think it's heavily inspired by this.
Freddie's voice works on club.
Yeah, and he
music.
Really loves it. He can like really get down into it. Yeah, he leans it. Into it.
Yeah, he enjoys it. He does. Mm. John, are you more Shannon than Fannett?
Well, I think it's the first Roger Taylor song that sounds like a Roger Taylor solo song.
Nice. Mm. Okay.
So I think this could easily have been on Strange Frontier or Fun in Space or Shove It.
Shove It. It does sound like a Shove It track.
It does sound like a cross Shove It track. Yeah. It's a very, very Roger song as opposed to a Queen Roger song.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's fair. I'm actually going to ask you, Simon, for an opinion on Fun It.
Well, it's difficult to know what else to add to that because I think you've all nailed it on the head. It feels like a song that has come 3 years ahead of where Queen got to. So if this had been on the Hot Space album, I think none of us would have batted an eyelid. I just find it fascinating that it's inspired and driven by Roger, who famously complained, you know, about the Hot Space. Mm. His drums were made to sound how he didn't like sounding it, and yet here he is. But it feels like he'd got a new toy with the electric drums, just as they in their infancy, and got inspired by it and had to play. So what for him was perhaps a nice little distraction and just a diversion and a nice curiosity ended up becoming the main sound of Queen for an album. He's probably, if he'd known his time, he might not have done it again.
That's a good point. I think at the time it would have felt quite innovative and cutting edge for him, I think.
Yeah, and I think he's just a bit of fun. The clue's in the title.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of Roger Taylor songs, so I obviously love this song. I love the riff. I think it's fantastic. It is a little bit silly, but I don't mind that at all.
No, and when you've got John, you know, forlornly looking at a girl across a beach, and there's Roger's going, "Ah, let's have fun." Sums the two of them up, doesn't it? Really?
Come on, mate. It's Wednesday. You haven't seen her. Let's have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now John's doing nice electric slides on his bends, and it's cool. It's fantastic. All right, well, let's get to the John Robbins theme. Leaving home ain't easy.
May
singing all the vocals on this number. Freddie's not on this track. And Suze, did you know that that little bridge bit that we came in with there, that Brian's voice was sped up for that?
Okay, I wondered
why it kind of sounds
they'd...
almost female, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've always thought it was meant to be a female voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how they achieve that.
It's interesting as well, because it's that's what he's hearing in his head. So it's like a memory.
Yes, of course. Of course. Do you connect with the track?
Yeah, very much. I think this is one of the only Queen songs where it's weird. It's kind of got this air of resignation to it that you don't find in songwriting in general. I think it's just really smart. And if someone came to me with this song going, hey, do you want to hear this song I've written? I think I'd be worried about them.
No.
They're definitely going through something.
Yeah.
It feels really like this is a song that could be released now. Equally, it could have been released in like a mid-60s Beatles album.
Yeah.
It's really ageless.
It is ageless. It is timeless track. That's fair. So, John, you've talked about Leaving Home and Easy a lot over the previous pods. And now we are here. Forgive me for being a little bit glib a little bit earlier, because obviously this was a very potent connection for you for quite a difficult period of your life. How has your relationship with the song, has it changed at all over the years, or does it always just bring you back to that moment?
No, it always just takes me back to being a kid and moving out of my the first house I lived in, which I lived in until I was about 11 or 12. But I, it's interesting, when I interviewed Brian, he said that he sort of doesn't do solo touring anymore because he didn't enjoy being both a singer and a guitarist. And it's weird because in that song, when he's singing both parts, in the main bit, he's right in the middle of his range, isn't he, Suze? He's right, he's very comfortable.
Yes.
But then you can hear his voice in the background is sort of that
straining. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that works on this song because it's such a fragile voice that it fits with the persona of the person who's singing. But I wonder if he perhaps found that restriction a bit limiting on like later tours with solo albums. But it definitely works here. And I think it's important that it's not Freddie, because Freddie's voice is too strong. So why would a strong person be this sort of unsure about themselves?
Yes. Freddie didn't do Resigned.
No.
He's a sensitive soul, isn't he, Albright?
Oh, he certainly is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got to admit, I'm sorry to say, this is, for me personally, and this will get me cancelled, Suze, because I know for a fact that Queen fans love this track, and I respect that fully, but it's a skipper for me.
Oh.
I'm a skippy on this one. I find its forlornness is just a bit off on the pace for me. And that sort of, is it a sitar sound? But that sort of, that sort of thing is...
The sitar's on Jealousy.
Yeah, that's
get your facts right.
Well,
this is probably a wah pedal.
It's a guitar sitar. Yeah, it's probably the wah or whatever he's using to sort of produce that sort of.
I think he's using a volume pedal.
Sound. Okay.
Is that what it is? Simple volume, right?
That makes sense. Right, I see. Yeah.
But that particular sound is not one that it's for some reason I don't gel with it. I don't gel with it. And I'm allowed to have that opinion. Thank you.
Well, I think that this album, you know, to be perfectly frank, is the first album we've had to deal with where there are skippers.
Yeah.
And everyone's got different skippers.
Yeah. And I'm very mindful of that. Like, if Funnet is the skipper for a lot of people, it isn't for me. It's like the song that I would pull out and put on a compilation. You know what I mean? And that's what I love about this band, is that eclectic, that it doesn't matter which song you pick up, there will always be someone who ardently defends it. Like, you could pull out My Baby Does Me off The Miracle and someone in the Twitterverse will go, shut up, it's their best song. Hmm. I love it. I love that about this band.
I would skip Bicycle Race.
Right.
And If You Can't Beat Them.
Ooh. And you did.
Yeah, that's why I wasn't here last week.
You did do that. You were like, no, there's too many songs on that track that I don't need.
But
I think
it's testament that because Queen don't do bad songs. They don't do songs that, as you say, there will always be people that like those songs because they're never bad. But, you know, it would be remarkable if you look at the entire canon of Queen music and there isn't something on there that wasn't quite for you. That you know, the odds of that must be phenomenal.
Mm. Yeah. I'm sure the band have songs that they would skip.
I'm sure, yeah.
I think Brian and Roger would skip the first half of Hot Space.
There was an interview I saw Brian doing with someone in Australia, breakfast news, when he was releasing Back to the Light. And obviously the Australian host was super excited. And he was like, my favourite track out of all of them is Cool Cat. I really like Cool Cat. Apologies to Australians. And, and Brian went, that's okay, you're allowed to like Cool Cat.
I like Cool Cat.
I love Cool Cat, it's great. But I just love the way you said that. You're allowed to like Cool Cat. listen, let's play a game. It's surely time for us to play a game.
Play the game, play the game, play the game.
Producer Sam, what have you found for us this week? Our main question today comes from Bethany from Arkansas.
Which is the only American state to begin with A and not end with A?
Oh.
Mm. It's a question that's kind of, the topic has been sort of discussed a few times on the pod, but I want to focus on it a little bit. Bethany wanted to know what lesser known or deep cut Queen track you would love to see used in film or TV. For example, Bethany really wants to see Thor and Mjolnir bash up some bad guys to hammer to fool. and on the back of that, I would also, just me personally, would be curious to know if there was a movie you would have loved Queen to have done a score for that they didn't have a chance to, maybe. Like they did with Flash Gordon and Highlander.
Their scores are so distinctive that it'd be interesting to see one on, like, a weird arty film. There's a Scorsese film called After Hours from 1985, and I just can imagine them doing a really weird and very complimentary score for that. People can only imagine that they've seen After Hours, which is a very strange film that no one's seen. But if they did it, I think it would be good.
I'd like to have seen My Melancholy Blues in a Woody Allen film. In one of the jazz clubs. Maybe the one that Annie Hall sings when she goes
right there between me and you, John. That's such a sophisticated and sensitive observation and an answer. And I am at, well, I think I would have preferred Queen to do Iron Man instead of AC/DC.
They did Iron Eagle.
Yeah.
Well, they had one song on Iron Eagle. Yeah. I think Brian would have liked to have done Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah. That's true. Yeah. But then it works when it's sort of, I don't know, the quirkier stuff, isn't it? But yeah. What a track, come on, tracks that we love to see turn up in films.
Ogre Battle in Shrek.
Oh yes.
That's
what we're talking about, John. That right there is what we are talking
Perfect.
About. Perfect. Yes. Seven Seas of Rye on an advert for cod liver oil? I don't know. It's all just off the top of my head here, Sue. So have you got one?
We know when that big building starts falling apart in Neverending Story. Stone Cold Crazy.
Do you know what? Stone Cold Crazy does turn up in
Cruella.
Cruella.
What does thank
it? You, Sam,
and I haven't seen that yet.
You should check out Cruella. I think you would love it.
Yeah, but I'll just be annoyed because it's not me.
She is a bit you.
I'm very bitter about Emma Stone because
she's sort of got your career.
Similarly strange faces. And I'm like, I should have done that.
When I did media studies, I used Stone Cold Crazy as the soundtrack to our gangster film.
Brilliant.
Ooh, that's good. Well.
Nice. Is that the one where you were smoking cigarettes all the time?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, okay. Well, we've ruined that question, Bethany. It was a brilliant question.
We did the ultimate answers. We need to believe in ourselves.
Yeah, we do. We do. We do. It's true. It's true. Listen, let's finish listening to the wonderful tracks on this album. We've only got a couple of tracks left on this side. The next one is the huge monster track, Don't Stop Me Now.
Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by.
Well, listeners, I would direct you to episode 8 of our Greatest Hits mini-pod, where we spend a good 15 minutes chatting about Don't Stop Me Now. It's a cracking little ep, where we talk about, you know, what was going on in Freddie's social life, and we talked a bit about Brian's solo and how the original version was a little bit heavier. Simon, I think you brought the Bohemian Rhapsody movie version where the guitars crept back in. It's a good chat we have. It's a good chat, I tell you. It's worth checking out. But we're going to chat a little bit more about it while we're here. The one thing I didn't get to do properly on that is, obviously, Don't Stop Me Now, Freddie Mercury, massive single. But at the time, actually, it got to number 9 in the UK charts. Would you like to know what was going on in the charts?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good idea.
This is the week beginning the 25th of March, 1979. It's a good game. I love this.
Is it just 9 Grease songs again?
Well, it isn't, actually. It's interesting, actually. But I think there's some real proper stuff in here. But you can sort of... It gives you a real flavour of what was going on in the zeitgeist at that time. So at number 10, Keep On Dancing by Gary's Gang. I hope that isn't what it sounds like, yeah. At number 9, Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. At number 8, Turn the Music Up by the Players Association. Maybe it was a football song, who knows? 7, Can You Feel the Force by The Real Thing. Of course, this is just after Star Wars, right? At number 6, I Want Your Love by Chic. That's a huge track. Number 5, Lucky Number by Lenny Lovitch. I don't know that. At number 4, Oliver's Army by Elvis Costello and the Attractions. Massive track.
Yeah. Okay.
At number 3, Something Else / Friggin' in the Riggin'. You know the band?
Six places better than Don't Stop Me Now, whatever
it
is.
Yeah.
Friggin' in the Riggin'.
Yeah, Friggin' in the Riggin' by the Sex Pistols. At number 2, In the Navy by the Village People. It's funny, isn't it? Friggin' in the Rigging's okay if you know it's by the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, you got
In the Navy by the Village People. And at number 1, the enormous I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor.
Ah, I did not know that. You know, interesting.
The bane of every karaoke night for me. Look, it has gone on to be arguably one of their top, you know, biggest 3 or 4 songs. Like, it's up there, right? You know, I mean, it's 3 times platinum all over the world and all the rest of it.
I'd say it's played more often in public than any other Queen song.
Yeah, I think you're right, yeah. It's their most versatile song as well, because you can play it at a wedding and a funeral. You can play it at a birthday party. And you put it on at a funeral and people still go, it's I don't know how it does it. It's got just the perfect balance.
I mean, you wouldn't have it as they're bringing the coffin into the church,
would
you?
I think I'd do it as one last wacky prank.
And then it's late as they take you back out.
Yeah.
It's too late.
I get them to take my coffin out of the funeral early. And then just play Dead on Time.
Yes. Yeah. And then on your epitaph, I was nothing if not punctual.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's a good point, John. It is that Queen song that isn't necessarily, like, everyone always thinks of Bohemian Rhapsody first, maybe, or Bites the Dust probably, but that thing of Don't Stop Me Now will come out, and everyone reacts the same way. Absolutely brilliant. Okay. Well, I think we've talked a lot about Don't Stop Me Now. Did you have anything else you wanted to add on that, John, actually?
Well, I'm team hashtag Live Killers version, because it's got more Brian in it. Yeah. And there's so little Brian in this song. I sort of feel it's not Queen's fault, but it's been hen-dooed to death for me.
It has been.
Don't Stop Me Now. But
it's a good song for sort of getting ready for a night out too, isn't it?
Yeah, but then you'll hear it four times on your night out as well. So you might not want to listen to it before you go.
Yeah.
I just wish there was more Brian involved, because it is quite a rocky track to an extent, but it just feels like it doesn't have a rock backing. But the weird thing is, if they released it now, it would chart higher than it did at the time.
Oh yeah.
Well, actually,
could they not promote it? Is it one of those songs where they weren't available to promote it or something like that?
Well, they would have been on tour when it came out.
It just feels like they were a big enough band for a song like this to have been a bigger hit. It's weird. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it was pretty jam-packed with big songs at that time.
What, Friggin' in the Riggin'?
It's a huge song. It's very much in the zeitgeist, that one. I've used zeitgeist twice in this pod, and I don't know what it means. McFly covered the song in first release for 2006, and it got to number one, beating out James Morrison, Lily Allen, The Smile, Shakira, and Wyclef Jean with Hips Don't Lie. And Rihanna's I'm So Cool. Yeah, it's up to all that. One interesting thing I'd say about it, it was only performed live of the whole band during that 79 tour, with its last performance happening on the Crazy Tour.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, that is interesting. They don't do it now, do they? Do they have it with Adam? Do the track he does, doesn't he?
Adam, yeah.
Yeah, big time.
They must do.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Of course they do.
Yeah,
there's a very good version of it from the Isle of Wight Festival.
You sort of can't not do it. It's that thing when you're looking at those biggest Queen songs, like We Are the Champions of Bohemian Rhapsody. They're the ones where you're like, yeah, they are overplayed though, and this is one of them. All right, let's get to more of that jazz, this final track here. We've got Roger Taylor playing most of the instruments and singing all the vocals on the last track of this album. So let's have a little listen to sort of the end section of the song. Really.
Only football gives us thrills. Rock and roll just pays the bills. Only our team is the real team. Bring out the dogs, get on your feet, lay on the floor.
Oh, have two drop-ins at the end, don't you? I really like this song. Obviously, it's a Roger Taylor song. I love it. It's very interesting that it includes that little medley of all the a whole load of tracks off the album. You're hearing Dead on Time, Bicycle Race, Mr. Five, You Can't Beat Me, Join Them, Fun It, and Fat Bottom Girls in there. And it's kind of a nice way to end the album. It's actually quite lyrically, it's quite a bleak song. Where do you stand on this track, Suze? Is it your jam?
What's the story behind this song? Does anyone, Simon, do you know the story behind how this song ended up being the last song on the album? How did this montage of the songs from the album end up within the song? Because I find it quite a baffling choice to end the album on, because it's all like Roger.
Yeah. It's like Roger snuck back into the studio before the album's gone to press, yeah, put this song on it, not told anyone, as like a prank or because he doesn't like the album. It's not quite clear what his target is.
Yeah, it's a strange one, because I don't have a problem with the song. I think it's good, but I can't quite understand how it ended up as the last song on the album and why there's a bit where there's a montage of their previous songs on it.
Yeah, Simon.
Yeah, no, I don't know, actually.
Don't sit there staring blankly. You have it's to answer end up on being behalf of the band immediately.
It'd probably be one of those things where it was like, we all decided there should be a montage of songs at the end, and we all love this song the most on the album, or something. But yeah, I find it a confusing song.
Yeah, no, it is definitely a curiosity, isn't it? And I think all I can say is I would love to have been a fly on the wall when they were discussing doing that. Because, you know, much as it's a great idea that Roger snuck in and did it without anyone realising, I suspect they did and were part of it. There probably then would have just been a massive row as to which songs actually got included in the medley, which ones got left out.
I'm not sure who he is in the song. So it reminds me a bit of Sheer Heart Attack, the song. When you're like, is he trying to appeal to a disaffected youth who are sort of tired of the same old music? And if so, is it like a sort of trying to answer the questions set by the Sex Pistols? Is it another one of those sorts of songs where they're trying to kind of have their cake and eat it? Because were you to be that disaffected youth, tired of the same old jazz, would another Queen album be top on your list of sort of things to get you out of that funk? But then he says, only football gives us thrills, rock and roll just pays the bills. So then he's that disaffected person.
He is. Mm. Yeah.
But
I think ennui can exist at any stage of your life, John.
No, but I'm not saying he can't have ennui. I'm just saying that it's not clear what he's got ennui about and whether it's actually him all the way through the song. Also, I think that medley at the end is just sounds like it's so sort of tacked on. It doesn't really make any sense.
It's like they went, oh, we'll have that as the last song on the album, so we better do something to make that the reason. None of it makes sense.
But there are hints at it. Like I said, throughout the album, towards the end of songs, they're putting in little jokes and odd noises.
Mm.
Yeah, they're trying stuff.
But this actually is a Roger Taylor solo song.
Because
Brian's not on it.
Yes.
The guitar doesn't sound like him. Roger's singing it, playing the drums, playing the instruments.
Mm.
It's odd that the band have gone, okay, the end of the album can just be sort of Roger doing something.
Mm. Well, Roger did that on Drowse.
That wasn't the end of the album, though.
Yeah, it's not the last track on the album.
And it sounded like it should have been on that album.
I'm going to have to start Googling now. Roger Taylor tracks finishing album, that's fair. I think the things that strike me, given that this is a song I actually do like, I love the riff and I love the vocals on it. I did spot what you were talking about earlier, Suze, where he flips across his range.
Yeah, you can hear the two distinct voices. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I feel like I'm really learning something. From you, you know, 3 years in. And the other thing is, he's a very good guitar player.
Mm.
Like, I really like the guitars on this track. I think it's great. Mm-hmm. I do think that the medley is a little bit jarring, and I think maybe intentionally so. I hope not. I just don't believe that Queen would do that through any kind of incompetence. That they're doing it because they intend
to. Oh, yeah,
to
they've made a choice, but I don't understand the choice.
Mm. Well, all I can say about that is the first time I heard this album, I heard that track for the first time, and I still remember that happening. And me going, what's happened? What's happened to my tape? Is my tape player broken? What's happened? And the thing is, what you're doing is at the end of an album, you're ensuring that everyone listening to it is still on their toes when you do that, right? I mean, you just...
there to make sure you're still awake.
It's essentially a teacher dropping a book on your desk
nodding off. Right? You put your favourite Christa Berg album on, John, and I tell you, by the last track, he doesn't care whether you're alive or dead.
I just think it shows that the album was done on a very short timescale. Mm. I like Roger's vocals. I like his guitar. I like the little arpeggio in the background. I like that it's sort of quite bleak. I do really like it. I don't know what it's doing here. Because
is there a better song to finish the album?
Yeah, another song that they didn't write because they let Roger put this on.
Dreamers Ball, you think, would have been a better closer.
That would have been such a great... That would have been like Melancholy Blues closing News of the World.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
There's an interesting discussion that rages online about it, is that it's sort of Roger expecting a backlash from Queen fans to this album. And so the idea of no more of that jazz is the fans saying... No more of this, please. Stop.
What, so it's
stop
a shade
now.
Song?
I don't know whether that would fly. I don't think the band had that much self-doubt about how things would go that they would acknowledge that, because I think they always had a belief that what they were doing was what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting one.
Yeah, they didn't skimp on the production, but I think maybe... I will take that point, John, that they had a shorter recording period for this album, and they weren't doing the thing that they were doing with News of the World, where it was intentionally so, you know, and they had a lot of other stuff on their plate. And bear in mind, during this period of their career, they're delivering an album a year.
Mm.
But no one does that these days.
No.
Right?
I mean,
not really.
In between two tours, And it was
this is when they stopped doing that, isn't it?
Yes.
And it was the first album they recorded outside of the UK, so it was, you know, all that going on as well.
Yeah, David Bowie sent them off to the Jazz Festival in Montreal, was it?
Yeah. Well, I hate to say this to you, Ro, but in 1978, Frank Zappa did two albums. And in 1979, he did five.
Oh, we've missed this. We've missed this bit. We didn't get this last week, did we?
Five albums in a year.
You make a fine point about quantity versus quality. And do you know what? Genuinely, on the last pod, I genuinely believed I missed you. listen, let's get to the exciting bit, folks. It is time to discuss the Queen de la Queen.
Made in heaven.
Now, we have a two-stage process, John. I'm going to remind you of how this works, which is we're going to pick what track goes on the ultimate Queen de la Queen playlist from this side of the album. Don't Stop Me Now, it's not included. It's already a hit single. People know that for free. Which non-single track on this side of the album would you want to put in your Queen de la Queen is what we're asking. And then after that, just for fun, we're going to pick our favourite song off the album, just for fun. So let us start with the Queen de la Queen, Suze. Which is your track of the this side of the album?
I'm going to choose Leaving Home Ain't Easy.
Just to spite me?
No, because I think,
Just to one, yeah.
You know what I'm like.
Yeah,
no, because I think it's the most interesting track on this side of the album.
That's a beautiful, beautiful selection. John, are you in that neck of the woods?
It depends what, if I'm thinking of the Queen de la Queen as a sort of playlist as a whole, because I think we've got other songs like Dreamer's Ball.
I need to update you on what happened on the last Queen de la Queen, because you sent your vote in for Jealousy, but we didn't tell you which track made it in.
No.
So you voted for Jealousy, I voted for Mustafa, and these two voted for, let me entertain you.
What?
So Let Me Entertain You, quite rightly, has made it into the Queen de la Queen, because it is, like, it's a massive Queen song. It's a big deal in the Queen canon. I think it's right. It's deservedly there.
It's not as good as Jealousy, though.
To you, subjective. I don't know. Do you know what? What's your favourite track on this side of the album, John?
Dreamer's Ball.
Fine. What about you, Simon?
Yeah, Dreamer's Ball, all day long.
Dreamer's
all
Ball, day long. Right. And mine is Dead on Time.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
I'm not out of my mind. I am allowed to love a Queen song if I want to, and I love Dead on Time.
Ro loves Party. Ro thinks Party's really good.
I don't. Well, I prefer Shit. I'll go that far. I don't mind Party. So. I really don't. Not anymore. I did when I first heard it. All right, so that puts Dreamer's Ball into the Queen de la Queen playlist, which I think is a correct and wonderful choice. Well done, us.
Yes,
we're a great team. that is shaping up nicely. That playlist. Let us know if you agree or disagree on our socials at the Queen Pod. On Instagram and on Twitter, and you can also get involved on Facebook. We've got a lot of noise going on there. Not on TikTok.
It's illegal because we're over 25.
Come on then, Suze.
What?
If you've got to pick one track, this is just for you, just for fun. If you've got to pick one track off the whole album, what is your favourite track?
My favourite track on the album is Let Me Entertain You.
Good for you. There you go. Why is John's making such a bad, weird face? Simon, what's your favourite track on the whole album?
Just so I can see John's face. Still, Let Me Entertain You.
Yeah, baby! Guess what my favourite track on the album is, John?
Oh, God, if it's Dead on Time, then it's sacked.
I've written it in advance. I put Dreamer's Ball.
Oh, lovely stuff.
He's lying, though, because he just picked...
What's yours? it was between Dreamer's Ball and Mustafa for me. For my favourite track on the whole album. But my favourite track on this side is Dead on Time.
But
if
Dream
I had one track
on
from the
side.
Whole album, it's different, isn't it? Because if you're picking a track from the whole
you're
album...
You're lying on the...
I'm not lying, I've written it!
I am looking at these notes and they are... It is Dreamer's Ball / Mustafa.
Blimey.
I don't understand it either, but it's what's there.
You're allowed to have a different choice for each category.
It's the space capsule on this one.
It doesn't make you a liar, it just makes you an idiot. John, what's your favourite track on the whole album?
I honestly don't know.
You can't pick between...
I can't pick between Jealousy, In Only 7 Days, Dreamer's Ball and Leaving Home Ain't Easy. Mm. I think the ballads have it on this album.
They are great.
I'm afraid.
They are great.
Oh, maybe I'll go Fat Bottom Girls. It's such a great riff.
Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fine. That's your favourite track on the album. I'm not even going to get into it. Let's move on. Okay, there we have it. We finally got to the end of this glorious investigation. It's taken us a year just to be able to sit down and discuss jazz, and it has been suitably feisty. I've enjoyed it. Thanks so much, guys. I really enjoyed it. It's been great. So I think our next podcast is going to be a ranking episode in which we plan to rank B-sides, specifically studio tracks that aren't officially on an album, like A Human Body, I Go Crazy, Hang On In There, tracks like that,
mm-hmm.
That often appear on the B-sides of singles. I think it's going to be a very cool episode, actually. It's nice to take some time to explore. Like, they're super unknown tracks, right? Which is cool. What have you guys got going on at the moment? Anything you guys want to plug?
On June the 12th, you can come to the Crazy Cocks in Piccadilly, where I'll be doing my first solo show with a full band at the beautiful Brasserie Zadel venue, and there will be Queen.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
John, have you got anything going on that you want to...
Yeah, well, aside from the Brian May episode,
yeah,
the whole
of
series of How Do You Cope is being released now. We've already episodes out, already got Reverend Richard Cole's, Razima Feek and Ruby Wax. But there's also episodes to come from Brian and from Gail Porter and from Lem Sisse. So, yes, it's an extraordinary story. So, yeah, Governor B, and yeah, I think there'll be about 13 or 14 episodes by the time the series ends, but that's out now on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lovely. Is that premise behind that essentially addressing, is there a particular angle on mental health that you're looking at?
It's just discussing with people how they overcome various either mental health problems or mental illness or trauma in their life. And series one and two are already up and available everywhere. So there's interviews with people like George Ezra and Emma Barnett and Terry White. So lots to sink. I mean, I wouldn't binge it all in a day. I'd sort of maybe stagger it out a bit. But there is light amongst the shade.
Yeah, of course. Beautiful. All right. And producer Sam, the single from your kid show is out at the moment, isn't it?
Yes. The Planet Rock single featuring Brian May and Andy and the Odd Sox. I was a runner on the show of that. And that single is available. Get it. It is great.
This is a great track, actually. It's really heavy. I love how heavy Brian made that track for kids. Definitely pick that up. All right. I think that does us for this week. I'm looking forward to the next one. However, just email us your stories and questions to queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. In fact, if you can record your question, either as audio or video, that gives us such production value, and it makes us all sound really cool, and it's really exciting. So, yeah, please, please send us in a little record of yourself asking a question you're dying to ask us, and we will ruin it just like we did with Bethany earlier on this pod. And just take the time to give us that star rating. We need that star rating on iTunes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I always find a little wisdom in these songs, so don't shun it, guys. Fun it. Thank you, Sue, Simon, John, and producer Sam. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
This has been The Queen Pod, a Seven Seas Films production, edited and produced by me, Sam Easton. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and stay in touch by emailing queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds. Like the breathable, silky smooth tree dasher, the responsive foam and extra grip of the tree runner, or the classic low-top look of the tree piper. Allbirds has a lightweight, ultra-packable shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.